Marriage Today presents Let's Get to the Heart of the Matter by Robert Morris.
Let me read you something. A woman accompanied her husband to the doctor's office. After his checkup, the doctor called the wife into his office alone. He said, "Your husband is suffering from a very serious disease combined with horrible stress. If you don't do the following, your husband will surely die. Each morning, fix him a healthy breakfast. Be pleasant and make sure he's in a good mood all day long. For dinner, prepare an especially nice meal for him. Don't ever discuss your problems with him. It will only make his stress worse. Try to relax your husband in the evening by wearing lingerie and giving him plenty of back rubs. Encourage him to watch sporting events on television often. And most importantly, make love with your husband several times a week and satisfy his every whim." On the way home, the husband asked his wife, "What did the doctor say?" "He said, you're going to die." Okay, I want to ask you to turn to two passages of Scripture. Turn to Matthew 7 and Luke 6. In other words, we're going to read a few verses in Matthew 7, and then we're going to turn just quickly to Luke 6 and see the corresponding passage in Luke 6. Today we're going to talk about let's get to the heart of the matter. The reason I like talking about giving is because if you ever really catch it, it changes your heart. And when it changes your heart, when your heart is changed, it will change your marriage. It will change your relationship with your children. It will change your relationship with the Lord. Probably my life message is on giving. And again, I'm telling you, it is so important because I've seen when people are changed from being getters to being givers, it changes everything else about your life as well. So we're going to read some verses now in Matthew 7. Then we're going to flip to Luke 6. These are the same verses. It's the same message. Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Jimmy just talked about the Beatitudes. And we call it the Sermon on the Mount. It's recorded parts of it in Luke chapter 6. So I'm going to show you the same message, but there is something in the middle in Luke 6 that isn't in Matthew 7 that we need to understand the context of it. All right? Matthew 7, verse 1. "Judge not, and you will not be judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you." You ever seen these verses before? "Judge not, and you will not be judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. For with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you." Now, let me ask you something. What's the context of the two verses that we just read? What would you, if you had to put it in one word, what would that word be? Judging, right? Don't judge and you won't be judged, because if you judge, you'll be judged. I mean, it's kind of clear this is talking about judging, right? All right, is it talking about money? You can talk, even though we're on television, you can talk, all right? You can answer me. Is it talking about money? Is there anything in there about money? Did you see the word money in there? No, you didn't, right? Okay. Now, I want us to memorize the first phrase and the last phrase, all right? Judge not, and you will not be judged. Will you say that? Judge not, and you will not be judged. Now, say this phrase. For with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Say that. For with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. All right, you got those two phrases? Judge not, and you will not be judged. For with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Now, flip to Luke 6. And look at the first phrase of verse 37. Verse 37, "Judge not, and you will not be judged." Do you see that? Okay, now look at the last phrase of verse 38. "For with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you." Now, look at me for a minute. Does this seem like this is the same subject that we just read? Judge not, you will not be judged. With the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And what did we all agree was the context of that? What's it talking about? Judging. All right, now let's go back down and read verse 37 and 38, the whole thing. Verse 37, judge not and you will not be judged. Condemn not and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. You ever heard this verse before? Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put in your bosom, for with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Now, what's the context of this passage? Judge. Where's the word money? Is the word money in that passage? Did you see the word money in that passage? No. You say, well, giving's in there. Giving is a verb. You know, I have a pet peeve when it comes to the church. My pet peeve is not that we don't understand Greek. It's that we don't understand English. Now, I didn't learn English in school. I didn't learn it in high school. I didn't learn it in college. In high school, I didn't know the Lord. I was on drugs, things like that. In college, I majored in pool and skipology. And so I didn't learn it in college either. But then I got saved and became a preacher. And this guy came up to me one time when I was beginning to preach, and I was beginning to preach and learn that, this guy came up to me afterwards and said to me, you have the worst grammar of any person I've ever heard in my life. And that ministered to me. And so I learned grammar, and I know grammar now. Matter of fact, one of our pastors just said to me this last week, you're a grammarian. He said, you're incredible. I was listening to you when you speak. And I speak grammar correctly, by the way. But it's helped me in understanding the Bible. Just to understand English has helped me in understanding the Bible. For instance, give is a verb, okay? Money is a noun. That money's not in there. It's nowhere in that verse. But 99% of the time, when you hear preaching on Luke 6:38, what is a pastor going to use it for? Money. But that's not the context. Now, we're going to stick it in there in a moment because you can. But let me explain something to you. We're going to start with the original context that he talked about. Now, don't leave because I'm going to give you a little grammar lesson here, okay? Don't check out on me, all right? Give is a verb. That's the action. You is the implied subject. Now, I know I just lost you right there. What that means is the subject of verse 38 is you. That's the person doing it. In other words, it's implied. It's not there. You give and it will be given back to you. It is a pronoun, and it's, and this is, oh, I'm just watching some of you just totally are loose. It is an objective pronoun. I know some of you just, I'm not in school. I don't want to hear this. Okay. It is an objective pronoun, which means it's a pronoun that it replaces an object. You have an it. There's no such thing as an it, okay? So it refers to something. So this is what this verse is saying. You give something, and whatever you give will be given back to you. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, you could say, if you give plants, plants will be given back to you. That's what this is saying. You give Snickers bars. Some of you are getting an idea here. And Snickers bars will be given back to you, okay? Now, but what we want to do, so can you put money in here? Yes, you can. But why don't we apply the subject first matter that Jesus is talking about? What's he talking about? He's talking about judgment. And then he includes condemnation and forgiveness. So let me tell you what verse 38 is actually saying. Here's what Jesus is saying. If you give judgment, judgment will be given back to you. Now, let me tell you something else about God. When you give to God, you get more back. Whatever it is that you give, you get more back. For instance, if you plant an apple seed, you don't get back just one apple or one apple seed. You actually get back a tree that has many apples on it, and each apple has many seeds, right? So look at the multiplication. I mean, that's incredible. You give one seed, you get back a tree with many apples and many seeds. Many, many, many more seeds than what you gave in the first place, than just the one seed you planted, all right? So this verse that says, if you give, it will be given back to you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. In other words, he's saying you're going to get more back. This is a great verse, and it's a terrible verse because it depends on what you give. You give judgment. Judgment is given back to you. You ready for this? Pressed down. Shaken together. Running over. You give condemnation. Condemnation is giving back to you. You give angry statements. Angry statements are given back to you. I was doing some marriage counseling. Marriage counseling, in essence, one time, but it was just the lady. She brought her children because she didn't have anything to do with them, and so she didn't have anyone to keep them. You know, so she and I left the door open. Always, if you counsel with a lady alone, you leave the door open. Your assistant's right there, so I have the door open. Well, she left her children then playing out here in the administrative assistant's office, and this is what. Listen to me. This is what happened exactly. Here's what she said. She said, "My children yell at me." She said that I can't. She said they yell at me. And then all of a sudden she goes, "Y'all stop it out there." I don't understand why they yell at me. You give yelling. Yelling is given back to you. You understand what I'm saying? Whatever you give is going to be given back to you. Good measure. Pressed down, shaken together, and running over. By the way, those are farming terms that Jesus used that they understood in Israel. He is referring to when they would farm a field, they were commanded to leave the corners of their field for the poor. Wouldn't that be wonderful if the church did that? If we would leave the corners of our field, and if you would leave the corners of your field, no matter what your field is, if your field is engineering or school teaching or oil business or cattle business, whatever your business is, if you'd leave the corners for the poor, do you realize how blessed your field would be? See, this is a God instituted the best social program that's ever been implemented in the world. He knew what he was doing. So they left the corners of their field for the poor. So Jesus is referring to the way poor people filled their baskets, and everyone in Israel knew what he was talking about. For instance, in a field, you have two types of workers. You have the workers in the middle of the field that are getting paid. They're gathering, putting food in their baskets, and you have the poor people in the corners of the field that aren't getting paid that are allowed to put food in their baskets. How do you think the poor people put food in their baskets? And how do you think the workers that got paid a dollar a day or a denarius a day were putting food in their baskets? You see what I'm saying? Think about this. If you were a poor person, first of all, you lived in the city. You didn't live outside the city, because in order to live outside the city, you had to be a landowner. So you live probably in the wall of the city, which is the first place that got killed during a war. So you're the first one to die. You probably lived in the wall. They made the wall, and they made these little holes in the wall for poor people to live in. So you lived in the city. You didn't live outside the city. But where would the farming be? Well, the farming's not going to be in the city. Farming's going to be outside the city. So you would have to walk maybe several miles to get to a farm to be able to get food out of the corners of the field. And you might come to the first farm, and you weren't there early enough, so all the food in the corners is already gone from that field. So you might have to walk to the next farm, or the next farm, or the next farm. So you'd have to walk a long way. So then when you got out there, you got one basket. You're going to fill that basket up. Then you're going to have to walk all the way back to the city. You're not going to have time to go back out there, right? And if you do have time to go back out, by the time you get out there, you're going to have to keep going to another farm, because all those corners are empty. So how do you think you would fill your basket if you were a poor person? Well, the first thing you'd do is you'd put a good measure in it, right? Not a half measure, but a full measure or a good measure. What would you do next? You'd put good measure, then what would you do? You'd press it down so you could get more in your basket. Then what would you do? You'd shake it so you could get even more in your basket. And then you'd put so much in your basket that when you'd carry it back, it would probably be running over. You see what I'm saying? So this is what Jesus is saying. If you'll give, this is the way my Father gives back to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. But this applies to everything in your life. If people are doing things to you and you can't figure out, why does it seem that I always get criticized? Why is everyone always criticizing me? I can tell you why. You're a critical person. If you're receiving it, you're giving it. And you say, yeah, but I get it a lot more than I give it. Mm-hmm. So why don't you try giving kindness? Why don't you try giving love? Why don't you try giving forgiveness? Why don't you try giving understanding? And then you'll get it a whole lot more. Isn't this good? This is good. This is better than your amening right now. I just want you to know that. Okay, so can you put money in that verse? Yes, you can. Because you can replace it with anything. So if you give money, you're going to get it back this way. And if you back up a little further, then you find the context of money. Look back at verse 30. Jesus says, give to everyone who asks of you. Now, this isn't money here, but it is talking about helping people. Give to everyone who asks of you. And from him who takes away your goods, do not ask them back. And just as you want men to do to you, you also do to them likewise. But if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. And if you lend or give to those from whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much back. But love your enemies. Do good, lend, hoping for nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High. For he is kind to the unthankful and the evil. By the way, that's us. Don't get a superior attitude all of a sudden. That's us. We're the unthankful and the evil. Therefore, be merciful, just as your Father also is merciful. And then we go back into the verses where we read, judge not, you won't be judged. Don't condemn, and forgive. Give forgiveness. So here's what he's saying. He's saying, I just want you to give. I want you to give. He said, even when you lend, I want you to hope that they don't pay you back. You ever do that? Hey, can I borrow $1,000? Yeah, and I hope you'll never be able to pay me back. I just want to give it to you. That's the attitude. Do you understand Luke 6:38 is about giving? Do you know what bothers me about the way people preach on Luke 6:38? I think that most preachers that preach on Luke 6:38 don't preach on giving. They actually preach on getting. Give and you'll get. Give and you'll get. Give and you'll get. How do you think God feels when a pastor gets up and preaches on give and you'll get, and everyone at the end of the message says, oh, I want to give so I can get, and God's up in heaven saying, oh, praise the Lord. Oh, I don't think he'd say that, I guess. Oh, praise me. Oh, I'm so excited. All of my people have caught the revelation of getting. That pastor preached, and he preached real well on getting, and they all caught it. And so they're all giving now so they can get. That's not what it's about. Now, let me tell you what Luke 6:38 is. Luke 6:38 is not the motive for giving. It's the reward for giving. In other words, the motive is back in the verses 30 through 36. The motive is give to help people. Give because you want to bless people. Give because you want to help someone who can't help himself. And if you'll do that, let me tell you what the reward is. Then I will give back to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together. Now, I'm going to say something that may blow you away. God really doesn't reward giving. He rewards giving from an unselfish heart. See, I know people who hear messages on giving and they give totally and completely out of selfishness. They give so they can get. And then you know what they do? They come to me and say, it's not working. And here's what I say to them. I never preached for you to give so you could get. I preached to give so you could give. And I said, if you would give, not expecting anything in return, you would get something in return. But you are expecting something in return, so you're not going to get anything in return. It's kind of a catch-22, isn't it? If you'll give and not expect anything back, I'll give back to you. But if you're waiting for me, say, well, I heard this message, and you said if I'd give and not expect anything back, I'd get, but I hadn't gotten yet. Well, it shows you're still expecting it. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's your heart. And if God can change your heart, He can change your marriage. Okay, now, go to Deuteronomy 15. Look at verse 7. If there is among you a poor man of your brethren within any of the gates in your land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor shut your hand from your poor brother, but you shall open your hand wide to him and willingly lend him sufficient for his need, whatever he needs. Now, this is what God is saying here. Don't harden your heart when it comes to giving. Lend to people and be generous in your living, in your giving, all right? Do it with a generous heart. So he's always trying to get to the heart. All right, now we're saying let's get to the heart of the matter. If you want to become a giver, and by the way, you were born a getter. You were born again a giver. But you have to retrain the way you think. If you want to become a giver, then here are some things you have to do, all right? Here's number one. Deal with a selfish heart. Deal with a selfish heart. Now, look at verse 9. It says, beware lest there be a wicked thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release is at hand, and your eye be evil against your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cry out to the Lord against you, and it becomes sin among you. He said, don't let a wicked thought come in your heart. Let me explain something to you. God calls selfishness wickedness. So if we're going to become givers, we're going to have to deal with selfish thoughts. And selfish thoughts, in God's mind, are wicked thoughts. Here's what he said. Your poor brother comes to you and says, listen, I need to borrow some money. But if you remember in Israel, every 7 years, you remember what happened? All debts were canceled. So this is what he says. Don't even let the thought come into your heart. Let me see now. If I loan him this money, this is June. And in October, it's the seventh year, and this debt will be canceled. If I loan him this money, I'm not going to get it back. You see what he said? He said, don't even think that way. That is selfishness. I want you to think that, hey, here's a brother in need, and I'm going to take care of him. Do you know what the Bible says? You say, well, I don't know about this, about debts being canceled. You know, you loan to someone, they don't pay you back. You know what the Bible says? If you give to the poor, you're actually, you ever heard this? Loaning to the Lord, and the Lord will pay him back. You've never given anything that God won't pay you back for it. Never. So don't allow selfishness to come in, and we are all born with that. I hate to kind of burst your bubble in this area, but your child's first word was not mama. It was not dada. Every child has the same first word. Every child. You bring them home from the hospital, you put them in that nice room that you made for them, and in the middle of the night, they will say their first word. I! I want a bottle. I want to be changed. I want you to get up in the middle of the night and take care of me. That's every baby's first word, I. And the second word that they learn is mine. 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 Do you hear the resonance of that? It just goes up your spine, doesn't it? Just mine. You can be in the other end of the house and you're enjoying a book and you hear this, mine. I mean, you got to go find the sound. Where is this coming from? And you walk in the other room and it's always a smaller child with an older child saying, mine. Now, I've learned something about parents. As we get older, we don't care about justice anymore. We care about quiet. So you got this, mine. So here we walk in as a parent and we say, give it to her. And the older child says, but Dad, it really is mine. Give it to her. She has things of mine too. Why? Because we're born selfish. You didn't have to teach your children to be selfish, did you? No. Your child's playing with something, child puts it down, goes over to play with something else. Another child comes over to play with what they were just playing with. What's going to happen? Mine. Now, I would like to say this too, since we're doing a marriage seminar. Women grow out of this faster than men do. Is that true? And I can tell you something, and if you haven't figured this out yet, if you've only been married for a little while, something that men will not share, food. I don't know if it's from our cavemen days or what, that we had to go out and kill food, but mine. And women always want to share food, don't they? And you know when they really want to share it? Every time you go through a drive-thru. What do they say? What would you like, honey? Oh, I don't want anything. I'll just have some of yours. No, you won't. You put your hand over here in my fries, you'll draw back a nub, lady. These are my fries. I want my fries. Yeah. Have they ever not put your fries in the bag? Have they ever done that to you? Well, I mean, you drive, then you leave, and what do? You got to get a few fries before you get home, right? So you're reaching in the bag for the fries. And I forgot my fries. All right, we're going to have to deal with selfishness. Here's the second thing. Deal with a grieving heart. Not only do we need to deal with a selfish heart, we need to deal with a grieving heart. Look at verse 10. You shall surely give to him, and your heart should not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your works and into all which you put your hand. Now listen to me carefully. Selfishness attacks us before we give. Grief attacks us after we give. Have you ever given something and then grieved over it? And you think, man, or how about this? You ever give in like a special offering and the washing machine breaks the next day? Isn't that amazing how that happens? And you think, man, if I had not given that, if I had known that these things were going to happen, I wouldn't have given. I'm telling you, Satan knows how to come in before we give and try to get us to be selfish and not to give. And then as soon as we do give, he comes in and tells us all the things we could have done with that money and how foolish we were for giving. And this is what God says. God says, don't do that. In other words, God is saying, you can trust me before you give and you can trust me after you give. You can trust me. I was speaking one time on this subject, and I got this illustration, and I gave a $100 bill to a guy before the service. And I was up speaking, talking about giving, and all of a sudden I just said, you know what? I'm short a little cash. I need $100. And this guy jumps up that I'd given it to before, runs up and gives it to me. I said, thank you. And then I just went right on preaching. And you could just see everyone was just thinking, because they didn't know that I gave it to them before the service, see. So everyone's just thinking, the audacity of that man to be up there in front of these people preaching and all of a sudden say, you know, I need some money. Would someone give me $100? And then that guy just runs up there and gives it to him. Now, let me tell you who was thinking it the most. His wife. She didn't know that I'd given it to him before. You should have seen her. And then I said, I said, you know, I don't think I can go on because all of you keep looking at me so strange because I asked for $100 and that guy gave me $100. I said, let me tell you why he gave it to me so quickly. I said, because I gave it to him before the service. Then you can see his wife. I knew that. And I said, the reason he gave it to me so quickly is because it was mine. It wasn't his. So let's go back to something we've already talked about. He wasn't giving it to me. He was returning it to me. And we talked about how the tithe belongs to the Lord, but I got a revelation for you that might get you a little more upset than the tithe belongs to the Lord. It all belongs to the Lord. It all belongs to Him. Do you know the reason that people grieve after they give is because they thought it was theirs? And if you ever get the revelation that you're a steward and not an owner, then God can ask you for anything. You know, God asked my wife and me for our house one time, our first home. We talked last night about giving your first to God, and I look back and I think it's 20 years ago, I think, Lord, how grateful I am. I didn't even know back then that revelation, but we gave our first home to you. We gave our first home away. God so put it in our hearts to just bless a family. Just bless them. And we said, yeah, Lord, we'll do that. And God has been so faithful. You know why we don't grieve, though, after we give? It wasn't ours in the first place. It was God's. So you're going to have to deal with a grieving heart. Here's the third thing you're going to have to do. Develop a generous heart. Develop a generous heart. Look at verse 14. You shall supply him liberally. Are generously from your flock, from your threshing floor, and from your winepress, from what the Lord has blessed you with. There it is. He's showing you again. I'm the one that gave it to you in the first place. From what the Lord has blessed you with, you shall give to Him. See, I was born always trying to figure out how I could make things work my way. I was a manipulator. I liked money growing up. I wanted to have a lot of money. I had a wrong concept of money constantly until I got saved. When I got saved, I changed. God changed me, but then I allowed Him to continue to change me, and I wanted to give. When Debbie and I first got married, we made $600 a month, and we were both working. $600 a month. We would go out to eat once a month, and we'd go to McDonald's or something like that. Sometimes we'd go to Denny's. You know, that was a sit-down restaurant. And we'd go out to eat once a month, and we would share a meal because we couldn't afford to each have a meal. We'd share a meal. Whatever we'd order, we'd split it, and we'd share it. All right? I get saved, and the first time we go out to eat, I get burdened for this waitress. And I say to Debbie, I'm not going to eat anything this time. You can have it, or you can just order half of what you would normally order. I'm not going to eat anything because I want to leave a bigger tip with a track for this waitress. Now, all I knew was that I'd gotten saved and I wanted everyone to get saved. And so we ordered just a little bit that night. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, $3, you know, I was normally going to leave $2 or $3 tip because we're not going to eat very much. And I was going to leave $5, but I don't know if $5 will get her attention. And so what? And then what about 10? And now I remember thinking, I'll give 20. And so I said to Debbie, let's give $20. We don't have it. Let's give it. Let's just believe God for it. We gave $20, left a track for like a $6 meal, you know, left a $20 tip with a track. The next week, we got a raise from $600 to $800, $200 a month. Left 20, got a $200 raise. Now, I remember thinking, this is good. But when I was giving, you have to remember, my motive was to get that woman saved. It wasn't to get a raise. It was to help someone. We went back to the restaurant the next month, and she didn't say anything about it. And at that time, now see, I should have just witnessed to her. But I'd just been saved, and so I thought, well, $20 wasn't enough. So I left a track that time with $50. Because I just wanted her to get saved. I want her to read the track. We go back the next month. She comes up to the table and she says, hey, I've been waiting to talk to y'all. You remember that little book? She called it a book. That little book that you left? You remember that little book you left? I said, yes. She said, I read it and I prayed the prayer at the end. And then I called my husband and read it to him over the phone and he prayed the prayer at the end. And I said, now, what do you mean you called your husband? And she said, well, he's in prison. And I called him and he read the prayer too. And it wasn't long after that that he got out of prison and we watched that couple get baptized in the church. And we watched God totally change their lives. Now, let me tell you, that's worth 70 bucks. Develop a generous heart. When you give, give. And give to give. Don't give to get. There was a pastor and his wife staying in our home a while back, and Debbie was showing them around the house. Just, you know, I don't know. This is a girl thing, but anytime you have company, you have to give a tour. Have you ever? And I didn't go because I've been on the tour, so. I stayed in the living room and she's showing them through the house. And I heard in the other room, I heard this pastor say, why do you think y'all been so blessed? I mean, God has so blessed you. Why do you think you've been so blessed? And Debbie just said, well, because of Robert's heart. There's no doubt in my mind. Because of his heart. He wants to give everything he can to the kingdom. And he can't outgive God. He cannot outgive God. He just keeps doing it. And God just keeps blessing us. Let God do a work in your heart. It will affect your marriage. It will affect everything you do. Because do you realize when you get in an argument with your spouse, there's selfishness there? Because you want what you want. And when God takes selfishness out and he puts generosity in, it will change your marriage, I promise you. Now here's the last thing. Develop a grateful heart. Develop a grateful heart. Look at verse 15. It says, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you, notice again he doesn't use the word suggest. Therefore, I command you this thing today. Every now and then, I remember my past. I really don't think God brings it up because he chose to not bring it up again. But I remember it. But you know what it does for me when I remember it? I think, Lord, I'm so grateful. I should be in jail right now. That's not a saying for a preacher to say. That's the truth. I should be in jail right now or dead. And God redeemed me. He redeemed my life out of the pit. I'm grateful. If he asked me to give someone a car, you think I'm going to argue with him? He's given me every car I've ever had. Even if I paid the payments to get it or paid cash for it, he gave me the ability to make that money. I told you my wife and I, by God's grace, gave away our first home. We've given 14 cars away. That's fun. That's really fun to pull up someone's driveway and say, we want to bless you guys. And they got all these kids and you need two cars. We want to bless you. And to leave that house, just what it does in your heart. You know, one of the first vehicles we ever gave, we were on the mission field and we were riding in this rickety old van. Now, right before we left, we had a van, and I said, Lord, I felt like, the Lord said to me, I want you to sell the van. And I said, Lord, I'd like to give it to someone. That's what's in my heart. I want to give it to someone. And the Lord said, just obey. Just do what I'm telling you to do. He said, I want you to sell it for $12,000. I said, okay. He tells me it's like on Friday. Sunday, this man walks up to me at church and says, would you like to sell your van? I said, yeah. He said, how about $12,000? Okay. He buys it, the van. I put the 12 in the bank. I leave the next week to go on the mission trip. I'm down there. We're riding in this rickety old van with this, you know, this missionary just right bumping along. And I said to this guy, why don't you get you a new van? He said, I'm about to. He said, last week, I was driving by this car lot, and the Lord spoke to me and said, that's your van right over there. And he said, I went over to it, and I looked at it, and I prayed over it. And God said, I'm going to give you the money for that van. And I said to him, how much is it? Anyone want to take a guess? $12,000. I said, go get the van. Do you realize that's fun? If we manage our money, if we do, and we didn't talk about it, we gave every person a CD with some financial principles on it, but there's a lot of teaching out there. We're just starting this. You need financial principles. You need to learn to budget. You need to learn to live below your means, which is living on about 70% of your income. 70% is what you ought to set your budget on. You need to learn to give. You need to learn these financial principles. You'll never give a vehicle to anyone if you can't manage your money. You'll never bless anyone if you can't manage it. Well, I'm telling you, this will affect your marriage. It'll affect your kids too. My son that's sitting right over here, he was about 4 years old when we gave that van to that missionary. Then we have a missions conference every year. He knew we gave that van to the missionary. So at the missions conference, he's 4 years old. He said, I want to buy a missionary car. So he saves his money all year to the missions conference. The missions conference comes, he's got like $34. He's four, okay? So they're up there and they're talking about so-and-so missionary needs a computer and we're raising 10, 20, you know, we're raising money. And he's just sitting there on the edge of his seat. And then they said, so-and-so needs a car. He put his hand up. I said, how much do you want to give? $34, he said. Gave every bit of it. The next year, he had $80-something. He saved the whole year again. He's sitting there at that missions conference waiting until they said, a car. Next year, he's got about $200. Now he's six years old. You know, he puts his hand up again. I remember $212, whatever it was. He gives the whole thing. I remember, now he's a six-year-old. I said to him, son, you know, your goal is to buy a whole car. For a missionary. Do you think you should give it all away, you know? And he's six. He says, Dad, if I give, God will give me more. I'm telling you, one day he'll buy a missionary car. I'm going to tell you one other story about my other son. His name is James. He works in the maintenance department of our church. He's the second longest employee at our church. I started the church, and the next week he started cleaning it. He's 19 years old. He's the best person I've ever seen with money. He probably has more in savings than many of you do. He's 19 years old. He saves and he saves. Can I tell you two things that mark a giver? They are very generous and very frugal. They are very generous and very frugal with their money. I wish I was more like James in this area. The whole family wishes we were more like him. We borrow from him. I knew he was frugal. Now, we call him tight, but I knew he was frugal. He won't spend money, and he's got it. He's got it everywhere, too. He's got it in checking account, savings account. He's got it in his wallet. He's got it in his room. He's got it in his car. He's got it everywhere. He's got money stashed everywhere. He's been doing this since he was young. I knew he was frugal, but I really didn't know that he was, I knew he was a giver too, but I didn't know to what degree he was a giver until I got a letter about 3 months ago. The letter's from a lady that had seen the book and the teaching, The Blessed Life, on television, and she'd ordered it, and it changed her life, and so she drove to the church from across. She was living in the Metroplex, but she had to drive about 45 minutes. She drove to the church to buy 10 more books for her friend. She was at the receptionist desk telling the receptionist how much the book had changed her life and how God had used it and all this. And she told her, she said, I came here to buy 10 books for 10 friends of mine to give away. The receptionist told her how to get to the bookstore. She went to the bookstore. She went in. She told them about the book and talked to them for a minute. And then she said, I want 10 books. The bookstore lady handed her the books. She puts them across the counter. The lady pulled out her wallet to pay for it. And the person at the bookstore said, it's taken care of. She said, what do you mean it's taken care of? She said, well, when you were at the receptionist desk, do you remember seeing the young man get on the elevator beside you? Do you remember that? And this is what she said. She said, I do. She said, I think he was taking out the trash. She said, yeah, he was taking out the trash. I would have never known this if I hadn't got the letter. The lady in the bookstore said, that's Pastor Robert's son. And he heard that you wanted to buy 10 more books. So he came in here and paid for them. That's why it's taken care of. Now, this is the greatest joy as a parent, to see your children become generous. And I'm telling you that this will affect your marriage and it will affect your children if you'll let God deal with your heart and you'll become a giver.
This concludes the teaching series, The Blessed Marriage, by Jimmy Evans and Robert Morris. For more information or additional resources, visit the Marriage Today website at marriagetoday.com.